rolling here. We're just getting started. And here we've got Brad on the line. Brad, are you here with us?
Yes, I am.
There he is. That's Brad. I promise that's really him. It's not just someone who sounds like him.
Ooh, actually, this is Brad's evil twin.
Is this Darb? That would be your evil twin's name. That's your name backwards. Well, I'm glad you're here, Darb. Then we've got some really awesome information to cover today. I'm really excited about this because this was probably the biggest man. When I learned this, it was just such a big eye opener for me, and it kind of took me from not really knowing how to act around women to understanding when I was or when I wasn't acting confident. Now, I don't know how this is for everybody else, but for me, I really had no idea whether or not I was coming across as confident and collected and awesome to girls, or if I was coming across like a complete idiot. So I sort of stumbled upon some concept, and it's probably been the biggest concept I've ever realized about understanding social interactions, period. Not just with women, but with anybody, with, you know, your boss or someone you meet on a daily basis, or, you know, your family, anybody, right? But it especially plays into relationships and interactions with women, because it's such a dynamic situation when you meet a girl and you're talking, she's trying to size you up and she doesn't really know if she can trust you yet, and you don't know if you can trust her yet. But usually if she has nice tits, you know you can, generally speaking. But anyway, so the point is that there is a concept underlying, there's actually a system behind, I know you're probably not surprised to hear that, but there's a system behind what makes you confident and what doesn't. And this is probably the backbone of real, actual content, the backbone of all my content, really, and what I teach, and it is called value. I'm not sure if we have Brad, if we have Kevin and Connor on the line, are they actually on the line, or are they just on the line?
I hope so. It says they are.
Let me unmute. Kevin, are you there?
I'm here.
Yay. Hey, man. How you doing?
Hey, there he is.
Okay, good. I had you muted there, and I'll probably mute you again in just a minute here, just to make sure that there's no background noise. Connor, are you there too?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Okay. Well, why don't I leave all you guys all unmuted, and we'll just you can chime in. Kevin, I know that you were a huge part of value, not really my discovery of value, but I know that discovering value for yourself was a huge part of your life whenever you sort of stumbled upon it. You want to talk a little bit about what you sort of experienced and what went through your head whenever you came across the concept in the first place?
Oh, when I came across the – can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So, when I came across the concept in the first place, it was counterintuitive to a lot of what, you know, what I originally thought. Like, I that, you know, there was a real big secret to being confident. I thought it was something that I didn't have. And, yeah, ultimately, the whole idea of value, once you get into it, is that you already have value. And, you know, it's a profound idea, but once you start to understand it and live it and play into those ideas, you start to reap the benefits.
Right. Okay, so whenever I found value, I was just starting to be a professional dating coach. This was years and years and years ago. And I sort of had a group of people together, and they presented an idea to me. It's kind of an unfinished idea, really. But it was the idea that confidence is fluid, right? So it's not something that's static, that sits there and you're a confident guy or you're not a confident guy, period, right? It's more focused around how you are in any given moment. And this makes a lot of sense if you think about it, because anytime that you are really familiar with something, you're automatically going to be more confident at that thing. You know, a professional swimmer has no problem stepping up to a pool and knowing exactly what to do, whereas I might fumble around and not really understand what, you know, I jump in and do a cannonball. That's pretty much it, you know. So it's really about how much you understand and how much you know about something. But whenever you really dig deep into it, you find that eventually the buck kind of stops at your confidence. Sort of stops at how much you think you're worth. So your personal self-worth. So in a situation where I know a lot about what's going on, I may believe that I'm worth more and therefore I act differently. And a situation where I feel like I don't know what's going on, I feel like I'm worth a lot less than normal, and then I act differently then too. Now, let me tell you how this comes into play whenever you're talking to women. Women have been sort of, you know, honing this skill of recognizing when a man is confident and when he's not confident for since the beginning of time, really. Since it was more, you needed to do more than just be bigger than everybody else in order to win, right? So in the beginning, it was survival of the fittest, and whoever is the biggest and strongest.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Mm-hmm.
You're breaking up really bad. I don't know if it's just me, but there's a lot of noise.
That was Connor. I just muted him, so we're good. Thanks.
Okay.
So the idea that that you know, it was survival of the fittest before, where if you were big and strong, you survived, and then if you weren't, you would just die off, basically. That used to be the case until we started introducing some kind of social behavior, and we had status. As soon as status entered the world, then we needed to use a different scale, right? It wasn't the strongest that were surviving anymore. It was the most intelligent, or the ones who were socially savvy, that were really surviving and thriving most. So what happens now is that women are searching for this indications that men are confident constantly. And if you're giving off a specific, we'll call them numbers. So there's actually five different, Kevin, you probably never heard me talk about this, but there's five different value levels. Originally, there was only four, but there's actually five. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. And they basically have numbers from 5 through 10. I know that's kind of strange because 9 and 10 are actually the same thing. I'll get into what that means in just a minute. But if you can master this, and it's really not that difficult to master, it's really simple. I'll go through all the concepts first, and then I'll talk about how to apply it. And then from there, it should be relatively simple to understand and use. But once you master it, you can always give off the impression that you're extremely confident, even if you have no idea what you're doing. Because there's a certain sort of indication, like something that we're looking for as humans. When we see somebody else, we're looking for an indication that this person is confident or that they are insecure in a certain area. And whenever what we're looking for specifically is kind of like a result of like how we're acting, basically the result of us believing in ourselves and the result of us being very confident in what we're doing. And that's based on your behavior and kind of how you see the world. And when you act a certain way, you don't even need to really feel like you're a confident guy. But as soon as you start acting in the way that I'm going to describe to you today, your confidence will come. And it comes very quickly because everyone else automatically assumes that you are confident. And they start treating you that way. And it allows you to sort of boost your confidence immediately. So let's talk a little bit about the five different levels of what's called value, or it's also known as value dynamics. And we'll talk about each one individually. And then as we kind of go through and get to the higher levels and we get to the sort of the peak, the best, the most confident, like sort of peak man level that you can be, we're going to talk a lot more about that. And then we'll go back through and talk about how to deal with each one of the other levels so that you're on top of it and you're not kind of falling behind or showing insecurity. So let's talk about the five different levels of confidence, or of what are called value dynamics. So the first value dynamic is actually what's called a five. And this is it's a number five, so each one's going to have a different number. And it's easier to think of it this way because you are essentially going to be giving people numbers, and you can tell which one's above or below the other one. As you get more confident, your number goes up. If you ever feel insecure, then your number goes down. I should also mention that, like I said before, this is very fluid, and it can change at any given moment. That means that 1 second you could be feeling like a, you know, like a 7 or an 8 or a 10, and then the next second you can do something or be weird or, you know, feel strange, and all of a sudden feel like a 5 or a 4, or 5 or a 6, but not 4. 4 isn't even a number. You can feel like a non-existent man at times. So let's talk a little bit about the first one. So the first level of dynamics is sort of the one I just recently discovered, and this is really interesting because I went kind of my entire life not knowing where to put certain people into this level. I thought that maybe they were somewhere else. I really didn't understand it. It didn't really make a lot of sense to me. But then once I figured it out, this made a whole lot of sense. A five is what's called deceptive dynamics. Kevin, you're probably going to be surprised to hear me talk about this because I've never mentioned it before in the years that you've known me. But deceptive dynamics is essentially where, instead of believing that someone has their own value whatsoever, which is normal, you know, that's pretty common that someone believes that they don't have any value. Instead of feeling like they can, you know, get value from other people, or that, you know, they need to bring people down, or they can compete with people, whatever it is, instead they actually deceive people in a way that allows them to sort of hide who they are. This is the lowest form of dynamics, value dynamics. This is someone who steals value from other people rather than asking for it, or even trying to fight them for it is better than stealing it. And this is essentially somebody whose entire life is a lie. You know, they've never done any work on themselves, and they've kind of stepped into this role as a person, and they'll be a chameleon with anybody they want and that kind of thing. All right, this is the absolute lowest level of value that you can be. And the reason why it's the lowest level is because you're always going to be reactive. It's the most reactive level, meaning that you're constantly searching for what you can take from people. And because you're constantly doing that, you're never aware of how much you're worth, ever. So that's the lowest. That's a level five. Now let's get into the original four, that are rather remaining, and we'll kind of talk about those. Those are going to be some that you see a lot more often. Let's talk first about a six. A six is what's called supplicative dynamics. So supplicative, to supplicate means to beg. So supplicative dynamics essentially means that you're begging for value from somebody else. This is usually people who are trying to trade. Like, I will buy you a drink so that you stay here and talk to me because you wouldn't talk to me otherwise, right? They don't think that they're worthy enough of anybody's attention. It's very, I guess it's like there's a lot of humility in it and shame in a level six. And most guys in the world are at this level of value dynamics. So, and again, this is how we are acting. It's not who we are. So, at any given moment, you can step out of six and step into 10, and you can, you know, be extremely confident and attractive as a man. But if you don't, your natural behavior will be to have these supplicative value movements and actions. Now, let's talk for a minute about what it actually means to be supplicative. We've got a lot more to cover today, so I'm only going to touch on this for just a minute. But the most important thing you need to know about being supplicative and how to know that you're being supplicative is essentially whenever you feel like you can't, like what you currently have as a person isn't enough, and you have to do something so that someone likes you. Anytime you feel that way, you are supplicating. You are at a level six in value. You're not the lowest, but you're pretty damn low, right? It's almost as it's where the average man is here. These guys are, you know, I was one of these guys for all of my life. I was a six. And so I found this scale, and then I was able to break free from it and actually be a 10 or a 9, I guess, technically. And I was, before that, though, I was just kind of, you know, a victim, so to speak. I mean, I was just trying and trying and trying and trying, and nothing was working, and
You
it felt really
sort of see
stressful.
yourself as a nice guy, though.
Yeah, I always did, you know, and I really believed that, you know, that somehow the nice guys were gonna win, you know? Like, at the end of the day, all this like pent up sexual aggression and secretly wanting to, like, you know, rip a girl's clothes off and fuck her, you know, and not saying anything about that would pay off in the end, and that I would be sort of crowned the winner by some higher power. I don't really know what I was thinking. And this is what a lot of guys think. They think that the more they get sort of the more they beg for someone else's acceptance, the closer they are to actually getting that acceptance. But nothing could be further from the truth. The truth is, the more you beg, the less likely it is you're going to get any acceptance, and the needier you seem. So these people come across as really needy, and they come across as very low value. If you're in a bar, this is the guy who's trying to buy a girl drinks. If you're a guy, you walk up and you start talking to both of them. If he thinks you can do something for him, he might buy you a drink. If he doesn't think you can do something for him, he will not. You know, typically he'll kind of scour away and just like disappear and into the shadows, you know. Now we're going to step into another level here. After six, we get into seven. And sevens would react in a very different way to that situation. Sevens are what's called combative dynamics, combative as in combat. Now, these guys are your typical kind of, like, you know, pardon my French here, but douchebag guys. I mean, they're like I guess I just said fuck a minute ago, and now I'm saying douchebag, and I'm saying pardon my French. But there are these, like, the typical douchebag jerk guys at wherever you are, right? Loud, really aggro, insulting, you know, really confrontational. These are guys that you see the most because they are the loudest. Now, let me tell you something very important about sevens. Sevens, I thought most of my life that sevens were just jerks, you know, and I thought for sure that it was that I didn't belong and that they were pushing me away because of that, you know, that I actually didn't belong there. I was a six, and so I shouldn't even be talking to this person. I shouldn't be approaching them or anything. And the problem with that is that sevens are just sixes that realize they can be an asshole and they can actually get people to do stuff for them. So it's a six with power. They get fed up with trying to beg for people's acceptance over and over again. And so eventually they're like, screw this. I'm just going to take everyone down to my level. They believe that they can't actually get any more valuable as a man or as people in general. And because of that, they are constantly trying to bring everyone else who seems to be higher value down to their level or below. This is like the kind of people who, you know, when you walk into a place and you see a girl you're attracted to, you walk over, you start talking to her. This is the kind of guy who walks up and starts insulting you, like making fun of you in front of her. Right? He's trying to drop your value down so that he seems like he's more valuable than you. Because at the end of the day, he doesn't think that he can be more valuable than his current level of confidence, and he can't be as you know, the best word to use is actually value instead of confidence, because at the end of the day, it's what we think we're worth. He doesn't think that he can get worth, he can become worth any more, any kind of simple way. So he's just trying to bring you down. He also thinks, though, this is really important to note, that you're faking it if you're acting more confident than him. And this is very, very important, because oftentimes, whenever a seven is insulting you, they are actually trying to help you. I know this sounds crazy, and you probably are like, what the hell are you talking about? Josh, doesn't make any sense. And I'll explain. What sevens will do is they believe that the peak of value for a person is the person who takes what they want and sort of like kicks ass and takes names, right? And doesn't take any prisoners, just kind of just whatever and goes in and is really aggressive and is the loudest and everything. And as they started to become this person, they started to see results. They started to see that people were paying attention to them more. They were getting chicks. They were getting more respect from sixes. So they're getting kind of a following of people who are lower status and lower value than them. And they sort of became big fish in a little pond, you know? I mean, they reign in their area. They reign dominion over their area, and especially their friendship circles. So when they do this, they believe that they've reached the peak, that there's nothing else they can do. They're the best. They're as high as it gets. And when you act like you're more confident than they are, they think that you're faking it, and they try to show you, essentially, that you're faking it. And this is totally subconscious. They're not trying to do you a favor by any chance. It's not like that. It's not like they're actually really great people or anything. I'm sure they are deep down, but that's not how they come across. Instead, it's more like they think that you're faking it, and so they want to show you that you are so you can realize what you have to do. And what you have to do in their eyes is be a dick. That's what they think you have to do. So they're kind of showing you that and allowing you to step into that place. It's really difficult to see that while someone's actively being a dickhead to you, because, you know, you want to punch them in the face. It's not really much else you want to do. So what do you do? I will get into how to deal with these different types in just a minute. But this one was really, really huge for me, because once I figured it out, all of a sudden I didn't have any competition anymore. The guys who were truly my competition were off being nice to me and picking up chicks. You know, they weren't trying to be aggressive or shoot me down. The guys who I thought were competition were these sevens, and once I understood how to deal with them, I never thought of them as competition ever again. And that made it really fun for me to walk into bars or clubs and places like that and kind of feel like I had a, you know, an atom bomb in my back pocket, as I used to feel. So that's a seven, and that's called combative dynamics. The next level, then, is an eight. An eight is what's called competitive dynamics. And competitive dynamics essentially is a concept that we only believe we're valuable if we compare ourselves to everyone else nearby and we are the most valuable. These people typically will, the way I used to describe this, which I think is probably the best way to do it, is that if you caught a fish, they caught a bigger fish. If you took a shit, they took a bigger shit. You know, if you played a sport, they played a better sport. You know, if you made out with a girl, they made out with two girls faster, right? Anytime you bring up something that you've done that's an accomplishment, they try automatically to say that they've done something better, right? This by far is the most unstable value dynamic number because it's a lot of work to constantly compete with everybody. And once you have competed with everybody in the room and you feel like you're the most valuable, you start to feel like you don't respect everyone in the room because you beat them all. And then you want to leave, and then you have to start all over again. So these people who have competitive dynamics are typically really just worn out in general. Like they don't stay here for very long. They typically snap at a moment's notice because they're so fatigued from having to keep this up all the time. And whenever you snap and you get under stress, you drop a level or two or three, depending, in your value scale. And that could mean that you go from an 8, typically, which is like competing and trying to win. And then if they don't win or they have some kind of stress point, they will automatically fall down to 7, which is combative, right? So this means that if this person who's trying to one-up you can't win, they will all of a sudden start insulting you, right? Trying to take you down, you know? Most fights don't happen with 7s. They don't happen with people who are combative. They happen with guys who are competitive because they spend a lot of time trying to compete, then they lose, and they're butthurt about it. They're, like, angry about it, and they turn into 7s. And at this point, they are now being combative with somebody who's proven to be more valuable than them. And usually this is a very, very bad situation for them. And so they get into fights a lot, you know. And so this happens often, but it's really one of the hardest value dynamics to sort of understand and to address and kind of, you know, the best way to put this really is to say deal with, because it's almost like they're trying to constantly steal the spotlight, but they're not doing it in a way that a 6 would do it, which is where they're trying to just beg for acceptance from everybody. So they don't come across as like low value, and they don't come across as assholes. They come across like they are competing with you for top dog spot in this social group. And this can be a very, very, like I said, very fatiguing thing if you don't know how to address it and how to deal with these guys so that they are actually interested in you and they give you props and everything. So I'll tell you, that one takes the most finesse. And then the final one is 9 and 10 kind of lumped together. And let me tell you why that is that way. 9 is the level at which you want to consider yourself. You never want to consider yourself a 10. If you've mastered value dynamics and you've gone to this highest level, which I'm going to tell you about in just a minute, you never want to consider yourself a 10 because a 10 means that you don't have any work to do and you don't keep it up. So if you consider yourself a 9, you'll always push forward and you'll actually be a 10 to everybody else. But if you consider yourself a 10, then you'll stop trying and you will automatically fall back probably to 8 status where you're trying to compete with everybody else because you'll start to notice that other people are boosting up in value as well. So let's talk a little bit about this dynamic. 10s and 9s are what's called cooperative dynamics. This is the highest level of value that you can possibly have. Cooperative dynamics essentially states the idea that once you feel that you have internally sourced value, meaning that your value comes from the inside out, not from the outside in, right? Then you've realized that you have an unlimited amount, meaning you can give it away, you'll never run out of it. And these people begin to give away value, meaning they make other people feel better, right? They start to make other people feel more valuable and more confident when they're around them. And because of this, these people then start to have a following. People start to want to be around them because they make them feel better, right? They say things that boost their value. And so the truth is, and this is a sad truth, but it's the truth, that most of us, most people in the world, don't know how to make themselves happy. Right? We don't know how to make myself. I don't know how to make myself happy. You don't know how to make yourself happy. It's just really difficult to figure out. But it's easy to make someone else happy. And it's typically easy for someone else to make you happy. So what nines and tens do is they focus a lot on making other people happy. And when they do this, they automatically become the source of this person's happiness. And this is very important, because if I can make you happy and you can't make yourself happy, I'm now the source of your happiness. I am the well from which your happiness flows. And if I'm not around you, you're not happy. So you need to be around me. And when you do that, you begin to follow me. These people naturally get followers, and they naturally become leaders, because all they're doing is constantly giving value to other people. This is very important. I'm going to come back to this in just a minute, because I want to really dive into what it means to be a, you know, let's say be a 10 for now. We'll shoot for that, though you'll never consider yourself a 10. What it means to be a 10 and how you can use this to really boost your level of confidence in general with your life, with your lifestyle. And it's really simple to implement and very mind-blowing once you start to see the results. But before I continue, I have a couple things I'd like to say. First off, if I didn't announce this earlier, if you're new to this and you haven't been on a call like this before, then and you're on your phone, if you have a question, you can press star 2 at any given moment, and it will raise your hand on our end, and I'll be able to unmute you. And then if you're listening on the web, you should see a little box there that has a Q&A section, and you can ask a question. Go ahead and type any questions that you have about anything, whether it's on topic or not, as long as it's relevant to what I do. I mean, don't ask me about cars. Though if you do have a car problem, there's an amazing mechanic on this call. I can see his name, so we could unmute him. But if it's relevant to any of the stuff that I teach, feel free to ask that question, and I will get to it as soon as we have a moment to breathe and to chat about stuff. In the meantime, Kevin, I have a question for you about value dynamics. Are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, so now I want to really talk to you about being a 10, because I remember specifically whenever you started embracing this. I remember whenever I came to your first class and I taught you, and I was like teaching out of an apartment or something in I think it was in North Carolina or something. And you were there, and I saw you, and you were really naturally very good at body language and stuff, and I was very very impressed with what you had and what you offered and how much you pushed yourself. But whenever we went over the value stuff and we started teaching the value dynamics, this is whenever I think that you really started to blossom as a man, because you were kind of boy-like before this, and then you stepped into your manhood whenever you really embraced this. And so I really want to ask you, what was the shift like for you when you started understanding how to use value?
Great question. First off. Well, that right there, even me saying great question, it comes out all the time in every conversation that I have and with every single person that I meet. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly giving value, because I understand that the person with the highest value understands that value isn't limited. So it's free range. Like, it's like you have this special treat. And everybody wants a piece of it. So, I mean, really, it is what everybody wants. Everybody wants to be accepted. Like you were saying, you came from being a 6, and I could definitely understand that. I've been there myself, and all I really wanted is to be accepted for who I am.
Right.
And you'll see it all the time, and you'll see it, a lot more in the people that are considered to be a 6 or 7 or 8. You'll see it all the time, and all they really want is to be accepted, and it's such a paradigm shift for anybody to just understand that, look, I don't have to get over on this person. I don't need to make this person feel any worse than they're making me feel. Like, I could honestly make them feel good about themselves, and really at that point I have full control over this interaction. And I think where that control started, it allowed me to see, okay, now I can be a man, now I can be a leader, because now I am in control.
Right. So basically, it's kind of like what you needed to give yourself permission to step into this place,
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking about it when you were talking earlier like a quick example was the other night I was hanging out with three other friends of mine, and I invited these two girls to come and have a few drinks with us. And these two girls, I didn't know these two girls any better than these guys did. Like, I just met them that day. And, you know, honestly, if I didn't say anything for the first half hour, it would have been complete awkward silence. And, you know, these girls would have been like, who the hell are these guys? You know, they're a bunch of losers, you know? And I really had to be the one, the star, I guess you would say, of this. You know, and I'm there, like, giving value. Oh, this guy, you know, this guy's a really cool guy. Oh, okay. And then asking the girl about her life. Oh, okay. And it's like, you know, I wasn't that guy naturally. You know, I wasn't that guy when I was younger. I was, you know what I mean? I would just sit there and drink and just wait for somebody else to take over, you know, so I could see, to see what I could do. But it really puts you in that place. And you can, and once understanding this and making it part of who you are, you can do it. And you can do it with flying colors.
You know, it's funny because it's really hard for me to convince people that I used to be crappy at this, you know, because it's so deep-rooted. And it's, I bet it's the same for you because you come across as extremely confident now. But I knew you then. I knew you before this, you know, and I know you what you were like before. So I know for sure that you've changed, you know, and that this is something that you've become and you've accepted about yourself, you know. And it's so deep-rooted into who you are that when you figure it out and you start using it, it's not even hard to figure out. Actually, it's like so simple, it makes me want to go, really? That's all? Are you sure? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, and it was very like, geez, very intense for me to like just even accept how simple it was. And so you know, I fought it for a long time after I heard the idea. I kind of fought the idea, and I didn't want to try it because I thought that if I tried it and it worked and I couldn't keep it up, that I was actually truly a failure, you know, and because it seemed so simple, you know, and there was a lot of pressure on that for me at least. But whenever I started using it and I really sort of dove into and just committed to it fully, and just tried to act like a 10 all the time, I noticed two things that are really important. One is that I realized how often I was being a 6. I mean, it was just every second of every day I was being a 6. I was just sitting there begging for people's acceptance all day long in every way, shape, or form possible, you know? And this has come across, obviously, very, very, very clearly to women when I was talking to them. You know, it would be like, oh, this guy... You know, I'd get a lot of the "what do you want" kind of responses from women, you know, and I didn't know why, because I'm still, I think, a great guy. I'm a cool, nice dude, you know, and I was even nicer then, you know, because I wanted something from all these girls. So, you know, it was very hard for me to accept the idea that maybe I was just unwanted by women, but the truth was that was not the case. It was not that I was unwanted. And instead, it was that the truth was that I was actually just acting like somebody that nobody would want, right? That's it. That's all. And when I started acting the way that everyone does want, then, you know, it came across like I was very, very desirable. And I want to just be clear about what it means to give value real quick, because Kevin, you kind of touched on it for a second there, and it was really funny to hear you give an example and then forget that everybody doesn't know exactly what that means. Like, you're like, oh, you know, I said,
I heard myself.
I said, great question. Yeah. You know, I'm doing it right there. And I was like, that's true. But I don't think that anybody would get that. You know what I mean? And you're doing it
right.
You're doing it subconsciously now, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the best way, and it was you who put it like this, it was that we all, like the whole value scale, you can substitute value, your value for being confidence. You know, people get their confidence from different places. People get their confidence from other people, but truly you could get your confidence from yourself. So I like that example where I'm ultimately giving confidence to somebody else. Like I'm telling you, hey man, that was a nice job that you did there. Hey, that's a good question. You know, that example,
exactly.
You know, I'm making you feel good.
You know, what's
that,
great.
That for everybody.
You know, what's great about what you've sort of the level at which you've come to understand this. Through the years that I've known you, is that when you use it with me, You're not, of course, you're not using it without, you're totally not thinking about it. You're just, it's who you are now. So it just seeped in deep and it became part of who you are. The same thing happened for me. I was not like this. And then I had to struggle trying to remember to be, you know, a 10 for a long time. And then all of a sudden it was my default, you know, and that's when things started like taking off for me in business and everything started working. And, it's almost like, it's such a powerful thing that whenever you meet somebody else who's also focused on being a 10 constantly, all you do is compliment each other back and forth, like all the damn time, to the point where someone walks by, they want to punch you both in the face because you're just, because you're so like positive and like supportive, you know, and of each other and of everybody else around you. But you can also, if someone has all the power in a situation, you can actually borrow that power by being a 10 to them. So, for example, Kevin, whenever you said great question, you know, you're kind of taking the floor in a way. You know, you're kind of going –
right, because I'm acting like I get all these questions all the time, and this question is better than the others.
Exactly. Exactly. So, like, in our own sort of subtle ways, you're basically saying to me and everybody else, like, hey, look, you know, I can hold my own here, and you're doing it in a way that says, you know, I can hold my own – and, you know, so can you, obviously. You know what I mean? And that's really the mindset that we want to have kind of coming into this value concept, you know. And I know, I remember, Kevin, I think you remember this guy. There was a guy named Jake Steiner. Do you remember him?
Yeah. I was just thinking about him today, actually.
That's random because it was only a very brief moment in our lives that we had the privilege, really, and the honor of being around him on a daily basis. And this guy was he sold bulk energy. So he sold like he'd lock you in at a price for energy in your building or something, and he would lock you in at this price for like 5 years, but you had to buy all the energy up front, right? So they would have this massive reserves of like whatever oil or they'd have, you know, hydroelectric farms basically, or whatever it was, and they would create this energy and then they'd sell it in bulk. So he was a sales guy, and we watched him build his sales team. You know, he didn't have a sales team when we met him, and he was living in the same building as us, and we watched him start to build his empire. And he was so well versed in the ways of value that when I met him, it was a frame battle like I've never experienced in my entire life. It was he was playing pool, and he was playing pool with these two really gorgeous women, and I walked up into the room where they were, and as soon as I walk in, he looks over and he goes, "Hey," and I go, "Hey guys, what's going on?" You know, so now I'm stepping into this thinking that I'm going to be like the cool, like, oh, they're going to go, "Oh, that guy was really cool," you know, "Who is he?" Blah blah blah. But as soon as I did that, Jake put his pool stick down, walked over and goes, "Jake Steiner, it's nice to meet you. I want to introduce you to my friends," right? So now he's taking control of the whole situation, you know? And I go, okay. So instead of fighting it, which would have been competitive, which would have meant I would have lost, right? I went over and was like, "Oh, nice to meet you. How'd you guys get such a good-looking friend?" You know, talking about Jake. So now I'm complimenting him, right? So this kept going back and forth, like, in like a secretly competitive way, right? Until we both walk outside, and Jake is just so kind of flustered that he goes, "All right, Josh, hold this bottle." Like, he's trying to do anything he can to get me to do some kind of compliance or like do something for him. So I was like, "Okay, I'll hold the bottle." And so I'm sitting there staring at him like, "Okay, now what?" You know? And he goes, "Push-up contest." And I was like, "Okay, you go first." He goes, "Okay." And he starts doing these push-ups. And I was like, "Ah, great job, man," when he's done. And I just took a swig of his bottle. And then I walked back into the pool room, you know? And he was like, "Oh, you asshole." You know, he's just, I mean, it was so much fun to deal with a guy who was this savvy. I've actually had one time in my life, he was on I called him in the middle of a sale, and he had a Bluetooth earpiece, and he answered the call and he kept making the sale. So he answered the call and he let me listen to him make this sale. And this guy was like, he's like, "Blah, blah, blah, I got this thing for you." And he's like, "No, thanks." You know, the guy was like, "No, thanks." And he goes, "Okay, well, I hear you there. And I'll just get out of here. And before I split, I just wanted to let you know one quick thing," right? So he was like, "Okay." And then he kept talking. And then like 10 minutes later, the guy was like, "You know what? I want 5 years. And he fucking ordered probably what ended up being like, I don't know, $700,000, $800,000 worth of energy, you know, and it was just mind blowing for me to see him do this. And when you run into another 10, someone who is a 10, you'll know it immediately because they're constantly doing this too, you know. So here's the sort of biggest, the biggest thing you have to let go. The biggest fear I think that you're going to have to let go in order to truly embrace value dynamics. And that is that people are going to catch you acting like something that you're not. That is not going to happen. I promise. People, no one will ever catch you doing this. If you step into a 10, like if for a moment you act like a 10, no one will go, dude, you're not really a 10. Except sevens, right? Sevens will try to do that, but they don't know any better. But no one else will do that, period. You'll just be completely fine. Everyone will just assume that's who you are. And when you meet people for the first time, if you act like a 10 from the moment you meet them, then they will be extremely attracted to you. Whether it's guys being wanting to be around you, like just be near you and buy drinks for you and do whatever they can to be like, you know, be in the forefront of your mind, or girls wanting to hook up with you, wanting to share with other women, wanting to sleep with you, things like that, especially flirting with you in general. And whenever people hear me talk, and I get a lot of this, I guess there's a lot of guys in this industry, in the sort of dating world or the pickup world or the seduction world, that teach, that come across really strange because they are very strange, most of them. And I get a lot of comments from customers and students, and they typically tell me that I come across as extremely confident and congruent, like a real person, you know, like I'm not lying. And the reason why is because everyone else who comes across as weird is trying to fake their value, right? They don't actually believe that they are valuable because they haven't used value dynamics in order to understand this. And the reason why I come across as extremely down to earth and confident to the core is because I am accepting value dynamics and using this instead of trying to get it come across as a certain way, right? If you try to come across as a certain way because you want people to like you, guess what? You're a six, right? You're supplicating. You're trying to beg for people's acceptance, and you're trying to act a certain way so you get a result. So this should kind of bring everything together, this concept. This is kind of at the core of everything that you will study and everything that you will use when it comes to meeting and attracting and sleeping with and seducing and building rapport with and, I don't know, going bowling with women. I don't care what you're doing. As long as you're with women in general, you'll be using the concept of value. Now let's talk about how to use it in a situation where you're coming into contact with different types of people. The first thing I'm going to talk about is the lowest form of value, which is deceptive dynamics. And deceptive dynamics is, like I said before, whenever someone is trying to steal value. They don't believe that they have value, so they're trying to steal it from you. You know, often they'll go behind your back trying to talk shit about you, that kind of stuff. And then being nice to you to your face. That's the kind of person that we're talking about here. And deceptive dynamics, when you deal with a deceptive dynamic person, it's almost always in your best interest to deceive them. I know that sounds kind of weird, but let me explain. Essentially, whenever you have someone that you think is trying to deceive you, consider that an open invitation to deceive them. Now, the way in which you do it is going to be very different than the way that they're doing it to you, and this is how it's going to keep you at a level 10 and not let you drop down to a 5. The only thing I want you to deceive them on is I want you to not let them know that you know they're deceiving you. That's all. And then besides that, stay away from them. Don't get near them. Don't try to build rapport with them. Don't try to connect with them. Don't try to help them. No, just stay away from them in general. But don't let them know that you know they're lying to you. Don't let them know that you figured out that they have deceptive dynamics. Because if they find that out, they'll change their game on you and they'll turn on you and they'll start trying to build a case against you because they don't want anybody to find out that they are deceptive, right? Because that's the lowest form of value and they don't want anybody to find that out. So typically with them, you just want to recognize it, don't say anything about it, and then get away, right? Don't try to figure them out or continue. So let's go up to six. Sixes are way more typical, and we'll talk about sixes for a bit here, and then we'll go into the other types, which I think a lot of people are very interested in as well. So because sixes are supplicating and they are trying to get your acceptance and trying to validate themselves, you know, they want to feel validated, it's very, very easy to lead a group of sixes. And the way that you do it is you just accept them, right? This is very important. If a six starts to try to win you over, like they're trying to, they're just trying to get your attention in some kind of way, they're trying to do something for you, they want to be nice to you, whatever it is, and it's, you're kind of getting annoyed by it, you know, in general, let's say, stop for a second and realize that they actually think that you're more valuable than them, and that's why they're doing this, right? And this is what's going to, you're going to keep this in mind as you go along through this entire process, because if you are acting as if you're a 10, you know, and you are, you know, acting like a 10 in general, then you're going to start to see that the way that other people treat you is from a place of feeling like they're not good enough. And you want to give each one of these different types of dynamics, each type of person, you want to give them what they're looking for and help them step up in the value dynamic scale. So sixes are looking for acceptance. So what do? You just accept them. It's really easy to do. You can go, you know what, man? You're cool. I like you. I like you. We're going to be friends. You know, that's all you have to do. You don't have to do anything else. They'll automatically feel accepted, and they'll automatically come to you and start to give you value. Immediately, they'll turn into tens with you. It's really simple. You don't have to, they don't need to jump up like, okay, now they're sevens and they're combative, and then you do it again, and then they become eights, and they do it again, and they become tens. You know, it's not like that, you know? They just jump straight from six to ten, and you can do this at any given moment. If you've been a six your whole life, you can literally just stop being a six and start being a ten, like right now. You know, immediately, and it will work, and you will automatically and instantly see all these different changes in your life and how people treat you, and you know, you'll start getting shit for free. I get a lot of stuff for free. Kevin, do you experience this too?
Getting stuff for free? Hell yeah.
Yeah, a lot, a lot.
Pretty hilarious,
cause,
actually.
Because we always say that, like, it's a really big deal, like, that's why you do this, but it's not why you do it. It's just a byproduct, so we joke around about it, like, It's just like a reassurance, like, oh crap, I am doing something right here. And
right.
It's
awesome. Brad, you've had this experience too, right?
Yeah, it's just recently, like, well, one of my favorite dive bars in LA, one of the bartenders there, I remember I met him when I first moved here and I didn't know anybody, and I just saw him standing outside the bar. I didn't know he was a bartender or anything. I was just like, hey, how's it going, man? And he's like, hey, what's up, blah, blah, blah. And we just talked for a while. And then he's like, oh, I was like, so do you go to this bar? And he goes, oh, actually, I'm a bartender. So you should come in sometime. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really see him for like another couple months, actually. And I came in and I was like, oh, hey, Dan, you know, I've met you outside. And he's like, oh, yeah, I remember you guys. And fast forward a few weeks and I don't know. We don't even have to like pay for drinks there ever, because if Dan's working, like he's just, I don't know. He just like invited us into his family. You know, it's like this small little dive bar that has like this really intense, close knit group of friends. And now I'm like part of their crew after being there for like, you know, a couple months, as opposed to most of the people in that group who have been there for literally 5 years or more. And so it's just funny. I mean, that happens all over. It's just people will. If you give them value, they'll give you anything they have that will sort of repay that, you know, like if they're a bartender, they'll give you drinks. If they're a bouncer, they'll give you, you know, access to their bar or whatever. Like, I don't know. It just works everywhere. I've gotten a lot of free coffee at coffee shops because I know I always meet the whole staff. You know,
this is funny, man. I worked at this place and there was like three different, I worked at this restaurant and there were like three different shops in the, like near us in this shopping center. And I would go by these three closest shops by. So one was like a yogurt place. The other one was like a chicken place. The other one was like Mexican food. And I always go in and, you know, one of the places had just opened up. So I go in and I just say, hey, how's it going? How are you guys doing? How's work today? Oh, everything's great. Oh, so you got, you're new here and, you know, just shooting the shit a little bit. And yeah, man, I would go in and then I would order something. I get ready to pay and they're like, nah, man, it's on the house. Take it. You know, just because like, and they only do that to me. There's like 30 people that work with me. And the only other person that gets free stuff is the really hot girl.
You know? That's Kevin. Have you ever seen the Eddie Murphy sketch for Saturday Night Live where he dresses up like a white guy. Like, he gets all his makeup on. That's when he was younger. And he gets all his makeup on, and he's like, we're going to go infiltrate the white man's world, you know? We're going to see what it's like to actually be a white man. And then it's like, you know, it's all sketch comedy, so it's not real, but it's like him in a studio, and he's like, you know, you see this white man? He's like watching a video, trying to practice, you know, study. And he's like, see how they always got their ass all tight? The ass is always tight. I got to make sure to keep my ass always tight like a white man, you know? So he's like, just like going through this studying thing, and then he starts going out to practice it, and they videotape it, and it's the funniest thing ever. It's not real, obviously, but he's like goes into a corner store to get a newspaper, and the guy's like, he goes to pay for it, and the guy's like, what are you doing? And he goes, I'd like to purchase your newspaper, you know? And he goes, you don't have to pay for it. Just take it, dude, you know? And so it's like, it was so funny, man. It was like he like sees a whole different world, you know? And I kind of felt like whenever I started doing that, I started seeing the same thing. I was like, is this really happening? Like, is this really for real, you know, that people are really, people really do this? And it's, you know, it's so funny because I got into this because I wanted to get more respect and I wanted to attract more women, you know, and I talk more and I'm more excited about the free stuff I get. Like, it's just, it's really funny, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
For me,
you just build friends. Like, you just have friends. Like it's crazy. Like, this is one of the most advanced things that, you know, I've ever learned from you, Josh. And what's advanced about it is not necessarily the concepts, because, you know, it's everybody kind of can understand, like, just be a cool person and make other people feel good. But the advanced part is that nobody would ever believe that this is the secret, you know, that this is the secret behind everything. Like, you know, you hear all this like pickup stuff and all this like infiltrating and lines and tricks and whatever, like, and at the end of the day, like, the Tao of badass, like, the way to be a real badass is to be a cool guy. Like, be cool, you know, like, be nice to people and make them feel good. And just things start happening like crazy, like magic, just, you know, free stuff. Girls are attracted. Guys want to be your friend. Phone numbers, like, business deals, like, everything just starts happening, just pouring into your life because you just decided to. I mean, most of us, we've always wanted to be this way, you know. I know that all of us on this phone call right now, I've always wanted to be the kind of person that makes other people feel good and you know, and feels good doing that in a genuine way, not like being nice to get things, but just being nice because, like, I know that when Kevin goes and talks to those people at the shops, he wasn't doing it thinking like, okay, if I'm really nice to that yogurt chick, you know, she's going to start giving me free yogurt. Like, he just saw somebody and was like, I'm going to go talk to them because they seem cool. I don't know exactly why they're cool, but they seem cool. So I'll find it out. You know,
it's funny. It's not even, I don't know about Kevin, but for me, whenever I do it, that doesn't even enter my mind either, whether or not they're cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, I know that someone doesn't say this shit. No one says this shit, but they think it, you know? And I know that. So if I just say it, whether or not I think they're cool, it doesn't even matter, you know? Or I think they're going to be cool, it doesn't even enter into my conversation, you know? Because I don't think that sevens are cool. Let me just be straight up front about that, you know? Sevens are dickheads. I don't really like them, you know? Whenever they are sevens, I can't stand them, you know? But it's not so much about that. It's more to me about just knowing people and knowing that if I have something to say, I should say it immediately and let them know that they're doing something right, you know, because we don't know. We don't know that we're doing something right, you know, and that's just kind of how it is. And it's, you know, it's the same when I first started using this concept. Actually, it was before I figured out that it was a concept, right? When I first started using it, I was still a barista in North Carolina in Chapel Hill. I was working in a coffee shop, and, you know, people work at coffee shops, they don't have the lowest value in the world, but they don't have very much value, you know? It's not like they're, like, people go, oh, you work at a coffee shop, yo, man, that's pretty awesome, you know? I went to coffee shop school, too, you know? They don't do that. It's just like, okay, well, that's cool, man, maybe I'll come in and buy coffee from you someday, you know? It doesn't really have anything else. So I was working there, and I started realizing that I could compliment women and they would come back more when I complimented them. So they would order more, and they would come back to the coffee shop, right? And I didn't originally think that I was like, oh no, I'm going to compliment women so that they come back. It was just a reason for me to be able to do it. I've always wanted to do it. I've always wanted to be that guy who compliments women, but I just didn't have a good reason to do it. You know, that wasn't selfish. Like, oh, if I compliment her, I'll get laid, right? Because if I was thinking that, it wouldn't have worked. Because then I would have been supplicating.
Right.
So it's all about your intention, why it is that you're doing what you're doing. That's it. You know, two guys can physically do exactly the same thing, but one's doing it for a different reason, and he comes across like he's very, very attractive and confident, and the other guy is doing it for a different reason, and he comes across like a loser, complete loser, doing the exact same thing. Let's take buying a drink. Buying a drink is a great example of this, right? Physically, two guys are at a bar, look exactly the same. Let's say they're twins, right? Twins at a bar, raised in different places, so they kind of have different levels of value. They didn't really know each other or talk to each other very much. One's raised by their dad, the other's raised by their mom, whatever, right? Two guys, they're both at a bar. They meet two other girls, you know, just different girls that are really cute. The one who is less confident buys the girl a drink. And at the exact same time, the one who's more confident buys the other girl a drink. Now, the exact same thing has happened here, right? In theory, you know, both girls should probably be like, oh, this is one of these guys buying me a drink, right? But because the guy who's more confident is acting as if he's a 10 while he's doing it, he can do whatever he wants. He can do that. You can buy a girl a drink now. You can start to break rules. It's sort of like seeing the Matrix in that you can start to bend the things around you. You get to jump straight to seduction. You get to, you know, openly sleep with many women. You know, there's lots of perks to being a 10, you know, or to at least practicing being a 10. And so I'm going to stress a lot that it's not about your actions, but it's not even so much about that. At the end of the day, it's more about your intention with what it is that you're doing. If you're doing something because you want somebody to like you, and you got to be really honest with yourself here, because you'll never admit it to yourself ever. It just won't happen. But if you're doing something and you know that you're doing it because you want someone to like you, then you have to reconsider it. You really do. Because if you do that thing, you're going to come across like you are valueless, like you are worthless. And no one's going to want to be around you because of that. No women are going to want to date you, nothing. So you really have to consider that this is a really serious sort of element in the entire process. And Brad, I like what you're saying, how you're like, it's just so amazing. It's just unbelievable that this is this big secret, you know, behind everything. And it, I know it sounds crazy, but it is. It totally is the big secret. We've had several guys, even on this call right now, some guys that I see on the call who've figured this out and I've talked to about it, or who have read it in the Tao of Badass. And, you know, the Tao of Badass kind of buries the value concept somewhere in there in the confidence chapter. And it's not why most guys buy it. They buy it because they want to learn, you know, all the secrets of attraction. But when they get to the confidence section of the value, and they start learning about value, the guys who get it, I know immediately that they get it, because it's such a powerful concept that it changes who they are instantly and in a very, very, very deep level. So that's we went over sixes. I know we're kind of running out of time here. So I'll kind of push forward, and we got a couple of questions here, so we'll get to those in a bit. Let's move on to what to do if you run into a 7, right? So you're being a 10, 10 meaning that you're basically just giving someone attention. It could be, if they're a 6, you're treating them like an equal, basically. One thing I always do, and I know this is a very powerful thing that I do that everyone overlooks, and it's just like, it's such a minor, small thing, but it plays a huge, huge role in how successful I am and how people see me as being successful at this. I treat busboys or like, you know, barbacks or anybody who has a very low value job, I treat them like they are complete equals to me. Like they are just like my buddies. I'll be like, hey, what's going on, man? I'll say that to him. I'll say it to everyone else too. But when they look at me, they never expect me to treat them as an equal. Almost never, because people don't do that. They treat them like they are slaves or something, you know? And so when they're out and all of a sudden you treat them as if they're an equal, people who like those people, i.e. bartenders or servers or owners or anybody, begins to feel like they owe you. And those people have the ability to give you free crap or to invite you to, you know, whatever parties, things like that, things that where you wouldn't normally be invited. Oops, shoot. I just unmuted everybody on accident. But here we are back in. So it's very important. So let's go from there on to sevens. When you run into somebody who's got combative dynamics, this is one of the hardest things to deal with. It's one of the hardest things to do. It's actually really easy to deal with and really simple, but it's just hard to go, okay, well, he's being a dick, but let me try this, right? Because initially what I want to do is go, fuck that guy, you know? I'm going to go away. I don't want to deal with that guy, right? So instead, you got to think about what a seven wants. Because a seven is typically the highest value person wherever they are, right? And because they used to be a six, and they used to supplicate and beg for stuff, and they realize that's bad, so now that they're dickheads, right? Because of that, you know one thing about them for sure, and that is that they want respect for figuring this out. That's what they want. They want people who seem to be more confident to respect them. That's all they want. So you have to give these guys respect. I know it's weird, and I know it's not typically what you'd want to do, but you have to call it out. And the easiest way to do this is, you know, a guy's like being a dick to you, whatever, being super outspoken, you know, and instead of being reactive in a negative way, you just go, you know what? It's funny. I bet a lot of people get pissed off when you say stuff like that, but I really appreciate that you're so honest and like, I respect that you're so honest about it and you don't beat around the bush or like try to deceive me or pretend like you're something that you're not. You just are who you are, and that's it, man, and I really appreciate that, you know? This disarms every seven you will ever run into, you know? All of a sudden, you will have all the value. If you run into a really socially savvy seven, which is kind of an oxymoron, really, but if you run into one, then they may begin to compete with you after that as just sort of because they don't know what else to do. Besides that, you have nothing else to even think about. You won't have to worry about anything. They'll immediately just flip right over, and you'll have everything under control. So it's one of the simpler ones, and it's not as complicated as dealing with an eight, but it is kind of hard to make yourself do it because typically we want the good guys to finish first, and we want the bad guys to lose, you know? But we don't realize that there aren't really any bad guys, you know, that the guys that we think are bad aren't actually bad. They're just acting like that momentarily because they don't feel like they have any value. So we'll get in now to the final one that we're going to talk about, and that is how to deal with an eight. Eights are a lot more complicated because if you win and they're competing with you, and if you win, then they feel less valuable, so they turn into sevens, and you don't want an eight to turn into a seven because they're usually very aggressive sevens whenever you do this. If they do turn into a seven, you can use the same exact technique on that you did on the sevens earlier. You can use that on an eight that's turned into a seven. So if you're talking to somebody who's one-upping you constantly, and then all of a sudden they start insulting you, you can be like, you know, it's, you know, I really respect actually that you speak what's on your mind, and a lot of guys don't do that, and I think it's kind of pussy. But I really dig that you do. And I get it, but a lot of people don't really like that. But I actually dig it. I think it's good. You know, I appreciate it. And what'll happen is if you do that and they do go to seven and that works, then you're fine. No worries about anything. You're good. They'll jump up to 10 and they'll be with you and they'll love you for life, dude. They'll be like they'll fight for you. They'll be your biggest fan. Now let's talk about what happens if what else you can do besides that, right? So the other option is you compete against them and you lose, right? So let's say that happens. Then you're reinforcing their competitive behavior and you are now, in their eyes, you are lower value. And so they begin to treat you as if you're lower value. They'll continue to try to one-up you constantly and you haven't helped them. You haven't given them any value, right? What you want to do is turn them into a 10. You don't want them to just act like an eight and stay there. You want them to become a 10 or you want them to go fuck a duck, right? And that's it, right? It's either you're gonna give them value and you're going to help them through this process. And if they follow you that way and they make it through, awesome. If you do this and they keep fighting you at seven land, then you can just move on, right? It's just one of those things. So let's talk a little bit about what to do if you can't compete with them, because if you win you lose, and if you lose you lose, right? So you can't compete with them. Instead, what you want to do is refuse to play, period, and then compliment them. Okay, so this is going to be kind of difficult, because when you refuse to play, you can't go, "I refuse to play," right? That doesn't work, right? That's a competitive thing. Again, you're like, "I don't need to play your game. I'm better than you," right? And that makes you what? It makes you an eight. It makes you competitive dynamic. So instead of doing that, if they're like, "Okay, so what's the biggest fish you ever caught?" Right? Because I bet I caught a bigger fish than you. You know, what I would do instead is to go, "You know, one thing about fishing that I think you'll probably appreciate is that just the action of going out and going fishing is really phenomenally just tranquil in general, right? You can just sit there. You don't have to catch any fish, but if you do, awesome. If you catch a big one, awesome. That's really great, you know, but it's not just you. It's usually you and your friends, and you kind of come together, and it's almost like you're catching this fish together, you know, and it becomes part of your lifestyle. It becomes who you are, and it's really just a phenomenal thing. So I don't really know how big my biggest fish was, but I bet you that you've had some amazing experiences fishing. Okay, so basically, you're like, "I'm not going to play your game, but I am going to give you value," right? I bet that you've got some amazing stories with fishing. What's your best story that you have with fishing, right? So now instead of saying, "Hey, dude, what's the biggest fish you've caught so I can tell you that I've caught a bigger one," right? Instead of saying that, they're saying, "Okay, so here's my story, the biggest fish I ever caught," right? And that's it. They're not being an eight. They're not doing that anymore at all. They feel free now. They're not trying to compete with you anymore. They're just talking about what they've experienced, right? They're not waiting to be reactive. When you do this, they will be free from competitive dynamics, and they will automatically turn into a 10. And these guys they're the most work, but they are the most solid 10s you'll ever meet are 8s that turn into 10s. Because when they get stressed out, they go back to 8 instead of going down to 6, you know. When I get stressed out, sometimes I'll go to 6, sometimes I'll go to 7, sometimes I'll go to 8, but I'm kind of all over the board because I came from a 6, you know. But if someone's strictly an 8 whenever they switch over, then that typically becomes the point they go to whenever they're stressed out. So that's not that bad, right? If a 7 jumps to 10, then typically when they get stressed out, they'll jump back to 7 until they get comfortable being a 10 for a long period of time, in which case they try not to step outside of that at all. So I know that this was kind of a long-winded and a lot of information that we went over so far. It is the cornerstone of being good with women and being an attractive guy in general. Connor, I muted Connor here, but whenever I met Connor for the first time, he was at a class of mine. And I noticed this about him, that he constantly gives value. I'm going to unmute you, Connor. I'm not sure if you have... Are you there?
Hello?
Hey, I can hear you now.
Hey, I didn't know if I was muted or not.
You were a minute ago, because I think someone was like, I don't know, cool. Spinning records or something behind you, and it was loud. But so when I first met you, Connor, instantly I could tell that you're going to be a phenomenal dating coach, because I saw you giving value. You didn't give it to me in particular, I think because you're probably intimidated at the time because you just met me. But I saw you giving it to other people, you know, and this was really, really important to me, because when you do this naturally, then everything else is simple. Everything's easy, you know. And I saw you do this. Kevin, you've stepped into this a whole lot, and Brad, you have too. But I saw different things in each one of you, which is really cool to have all three of you on the call right now, which is very fun. It was what I noticed about you, Connor. Brad, I noticed your authenticity first, and Kevin, I noticed that you give great blowjobs first, which is really just, I mean, how often do you find a guy?
I think I'm on the wrong call, guys.
Oh, sorry. Oh yeah, Connor. Yeah. This is the gay call for today. No. but seriously, but what I first noticed about Kevin though was his, sort of like second nature understanding of interaction that I don't think he really tapped into yet, which was that, you know, he, just like you, Connor, Kevin understood body language almost instantly and just figured it out, and it was really genuine, and it was really a breath of fresh air. So, you know, this stands out to me. This kind of stuff stands out to me a lot, You know, and as you shift from being whatever number you were in the past or whatever number you might typically be, as you just begin to be a 10, everybody, you know, on this call, your entire life will shift overnight. You'll go from having a difficult time to everything being easy. You know, have you ever had an experience where it's like a day where everything sucks, you know, where it's like, oh, well, you know, it's cloudy out, or it should be nicer, or everyone treats me like crap, whatever. Like all those thoughts, they go away. That stuff goes away. You can cure depression by acting like a 10. It does happen. I know a lot of guys have done it. You know, I wasn't severely depressed, but I was pretty down on myself before I figured this out, before I was exposed to it, and it did change my life. So, you know, it was a very, very big deal, and it's been huge for everyone who's tried it out. So just give value. Don't worry about anything else. Just act like a 10. That's it. And as long as you focus on acting like a 10, everything will work out. I'm going to go ahead and see who I'm going to mute you again, Connor, because it sounds like there's stuff going on in the background again. There we go. All muted. All right, Brad, do you want to go ahead and go through some of these questions here and we'll answer them?
Yeah. All right. Let's start off with Michael. He said, you said the next time you see a girl, you start an attraction again, but then you said after meeting a girl online, you shouldn't begin an attraction when meeting her. So how do you know when you can break the rules?
Okay. So whenever you, this concept of going through the process, the stages that you go through and then seeing her again and where to start, it's kind of a fluid thing. You really want to read her and figure out where she is, right? So when you meet up with somebody from online dating, you're not meeting up with her for the second time. You're meeting up with her for the first time, but you have to remember that she's already gone through the stages of attraction with you after interacting with you and seeing your profile, right? So she's already gone through that process. So you don't want to start an attraction. Instead, you want to start with comfort and then move back into attraction and ramp it up some and then push through, right? So it's a little bit different than normal, you know? But whenever you meet a girl and then you hang out with her, you go through the process, and then you see her again later, especially if you haven't become sexual with her yet. If you become sexual with her and you've made out with her or you have slept with her, things like that, things may be a little bit different. But if you haven't done that yet, then your focus really needs to be on getting back to attraction as fast as possible when you first start out. And the reason why is because, not because attraction is necessary here, but because it is the safest stage to start in. If you start in rapport and you find out she's not there with you, then you're thrown in the friend zone. If you start in seduction and you find she's not with you, you look like a creep. If you start in attraction and you find out she's not an attraction, you just move on to the next stage. There's no nothing goes wrong, right? So that's how you know. It's not that you're breaking the rules. It's just that you want to start there. And if things seem to be going really smoothly and easily and she's touching you a lot and she's reciprocating a lot of your attraction, things like that, then you don't have to worry. You can just go straight into the next stage and you don't have to spend much time there. But you want to start there just in case, because you don't want to risk it otherwise. Cool. So that's that. I'm going to go ahead and get rid of that one, Brad. So what's the next question we got here?
All right. Where can I learn more about these value dynamics and why people do things? Is there a source for this?
I just want to note that this is things with a Z, not things with an S. Thing Z. Is there a source for this? Yes, there is a source for this. It's actually two different concepts. I don't think value dynamics is, as it's stated, is actually something that you'll be able to find. Let me see if I can look it up. Looks like some people talk about it, but I don't think that it actually is what... No, I don't see it. I don't see it being anything useful. Instead, you know, if you have the Tao of Badass, it's in there. So you're on this call, so you have the Tao of Badass. So just go in the Tao of Badass and read up on it, and you'll learn everything you need to know about it, and you can start using it immediately. The hard thing about this is that no one talks about it because no one really knows it. I learned it, and then I had to figure out what it really meant on my own. I mean, when I was first exposed to it, I was just exposed to the numbers, and I didn't really know what anything meant. And then later on, a friend of mine at the time was kind of exploring some other stuff, and he found something that parallels over top of this, and that was, you know, calling them supplicative dynamics and things like that, all the different names that went along with them. And so it's really difficult to search up on it because it's kind of an underdeveloped concept. So the only place I know of that even talks about it anywhere is my book because I wrote about it. So I would just start there, and then if you want to, really, I mean, you don't really need to. It's not rocket science, you know. You don't really need to worry about it. I know it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating, and I'm just like you. I wanted to know everything there is to know about it. But the best thing to do is to actually get out and start to put numbers on people and go, okay, that guy's acting like a six. That guy's acting like an eight. This guy's acting like a seven, you know, and just start to size people up and figure out where they are. And then you just continue to act like a 10 and watch how that affects everything around you. All right, Brad, you want to go on the next one?
Yes, this is from Phil. How do you manage investment level? If you qualify her and then sleep with her, aren't you implying that you're very interested in the girl? High investment level. What do you do to balance showing interest and being too into the girl without her losing interest?
Okay, so something that's going to be really, I'm going to be very, very clear about here is that you only want to manage your investment level during the stage of attraction. That's it. So if you slept with her, you're not really in the stage of attraction anymore, are you? You were in the stage of seduction before, you know? So that changes things. You're allowed to invest starting in the rapport phase because investment during the rapport phase is necessary. It doesn't come across as neediness. It comes across as vulnerability, which is what you need in order to build rapport. But if you try to bring this out too early and you try to invest too early during the stage of attraction, then you kill the attraction by trying to invest too much because you come across as really, really needing it. And if they don't really need it, then they don't really care, you know? So it's not so much about managing your investment level unless you're in a relationship long term, in which case you're going to be managing neediness, right? The way that you manage neediness in a relationship long term, by the way, you don't want to. I saw here you said you kind of talked about it as if, you know, saying that you're very interested or invested in the girl is a bad thing. That's not a bad thing at all when you're in a relationship. When you've gone past the sex stage and you're kind of trying to balance the neediness here, you have to understand that neediness and value outside the relationship are both tied together, right? So the more people that need you outside the relationship, the less needy you will be within the relationship. And the fewer people that need you outside the relationship, the more needy you'll be within the relationship. So if you want to balance your neediness and you think you're being too needy, right? All you have to do is be a 10 outside the relationship with everybody else, and more people will need you. They'll have to go through you for their happiness, so they'll need you. And that will drop your neediness in your relationship, and it'll raise hers in the relationship. So if you have kind of an aloof girl who's not really paying that much attention to you, who's like, you know, got a lot of other guys that she's talking to or anything like that, or if she's like, you feel like you're going to lose her at any given moment, like she's going to walk away or cheat on you or something, acting like a 10 outside the relationship almost always fixes this like instantaneously. She'll all of a sudden start to invest more and you know, put more effort into the relationship. That's a really great question, Phil. I really appreciate you asking that because I don't really get to talk about that very much. So thanks for that. Brad, you want to go on to the next one?
This is from Victor.
Victor.
He says, what do you do if they jump back down to a seven after you've already complimented them on being positively outspoken? Do you compliment them again?
Kevin, do you want to answer this question?
Yeah, sure.
Did you get the whole question?
Yeah, I got the whole question. It's about seven, and you've already tried to handle the situation. So, like, say for instance, somebody says something that hurts your feelings. You were saying it earlier. You were saying that eights were the hardest to deal with, and you know, sevens tend to be a little bit easier. For me personally, I think that in the past, sevens were harder to deal with only because it took a lot of emotional strength for me to have to deal with you know, somebody who was actually insulting me, you
Right.
know, rather than dealing with somebody who's just trying to be better than me.
Right.
You know, dealing with eights, you know, it's a whole nother thing. But back to seven, as I was saying, was like, what I like to do, and I like what you were saying, Josh, you know, it's initially how I started handling the situation was, you know, telling somebody, okay, you know, I respect your opinion, you know, and then I had to kind of put it more in my own terminology or vernacular. And I was like, you know, what I would tend to say if somebody says something like, oh, Kevin, Kevin is.
Do you want me to insult you?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, do it, please.
Okay, all right. You're kind of not very intelligent, are you?
So what I would do is, and sorry for cutting you off in the middle of role play. What I'll do is I'll actually laugh at what they say. I'll laugh at it because what are they really trying to do? At least in this situation, is they're trying to make the other people around them laugh. You know, they're trying to get acceptance from everybody around them, you know, by harping on you and making fun of you. And you're this target. So if you can instead put yourself in the place of another person that they're trying to get acceptance from, you know, you could go back to being a 9 or 10. So I would laugh and I would actually say something along the lines of, I'll be like, holy shit, man, you're really fucking good at insulting people. Holy shit, man. Like, hold on. Just give me like 5 minutes. I'm going to come back with some shit, but God damn it. You're fucking good, bro. You know what I mean? And just like that. And really, you'll see a smirk on them and they will laugh, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, I've done this so many times to people. I had this one guy that would insult people constantly, and nobody knew how to deal with him. Everybody hated him. They always thought that he was just a miserable person, but really he wasn't. He had so much fun insulting people. And when I would laugh at his jokes, and I would tell him, holy shit, that was really good. Like, I don't know how you're a quick, like I would come, I say, look, you're fast, you're quick. You know what I mean? Like, you come out and you can just call me gay all the time. And every time you call me gay, it still makes me laugh.
You felt a little gayer? Is that what you're going to say? Every time you called me gay, yeah. I felt it. You know, I felt a little bit gayer.
You know what I mean? So he told me one day, he was like, Kevin, man, I get you, bro. I get you, dude. I see what the fuck you're doing, bro.
Oh, no.
he's like everybody else, you know, they get all tight and shit, but dude, you just laugh and you're a cool guy, man. I really like you. And he said that to me on the side. And mm-hmm. and honestly, like if I got caught up in having a bad day and I like took that shit and I started getting all passive aggressive with him, you know what I mean? I would have ended up being this little bitch and being in a very uncomfortable environment. But because I gave him the acceptance that he wanted is ultimately what I'm trying to say.
Right. And the only thing you got to be careful with, and I know that you are managing this, Kevin, so I just want to touch on this too and make a note of it because I just thought of it. Whenever you do give someone acceptance for being a 7, it's important that they know why. Because if they think that they're getting acceptance from you just because they're being dicks, they'll keep being dicks because that's how they get their acceptance, you know? So, so I know that you're managing that already, but you just didn't mention it. But I thought that I might mention that too, because if you actually came out and said, you know what, you're pretty good at this. You're pretty good at this whole insulting thing. I'm going to take notes from you, you know? And he's like, oh, you know, he smiles a little bit. Maybe he does it a couple more times, you know? But I do think that at some point you probably were like, hey, you know, I actually do really respect that you're so outspoken, you know? You know, at some point, I'm sure that you had that conversation, not even like in the same way that I just did, but he felt that around you. You know, he felt like what he was doing was genuinely good. Like he genuinely felt like he didn't need to worry about it anymore. It's funny that he saw you, though. That's actually really cool that he was like, I see what you're doing here, you know? Because that is what has to happen before he realizes that you are actually at a level above him, you know? And whenever he sees that, he can model it, you know? And then he can stop being a 7. So, it's a very powerful, concept. Thanks for that, Kevin.
Yeah.
Brad, you want to get the next question?
Yeah. All right. Anonymous person asks, do you know any good banter improving games?
Yes. Probably the best one for banter improvement is to find a friend of yours and to play a game called Yes And. Kevin, do you know this game?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yes, and. basically,
yeah, it's an improv game, really.
It's an improv game, exactly. And that's all that banter really is. It's tapping into that improv part of you, you know, that's like, okay, I'm just going to say what comes to my mind, and I'm going to have a couple things in my back pocket just in case I forget. And basically what you do is you're going to have banter for different purposes. Banter in general, just to generate attraction, and banter to overcome tests is another one. So let's take those as two different things. Yes, and is a great one for actually for both. And let's start with the insults. Let's say someone's testing you and a girl's congruence testing you, and she's like, "Oh, nice shoes, nerd," you know, and you go, "Yeah, and they came with a free lightsaber," you know. That's banter, right? That's banter. So like that would be a version of it. So you'd have a friend of yours insult you constantly, just not all over the place, like every single day, but they'd first you start out just kind of sitting maybe across from each other and being like, "Okay, let's go," and they're like, "Just leave me alone," and you're like, "Yeah, and if I did that, who would you talk to?" You know, and they're like, "Look, just fuck off." And you're like, "Whoa, whoa, yeah," and no, actually, I would say whoa, whoa here. I wouldn't say yes and, but if I stuck to yes and, I might go, and flirt with somebody else. But you're loving this. Why would I want to do that? You know, so like,
well, the whole idea of yes and, you don't actually have to say yes. It's just that you're not disagreeing with them. Like right. You're not negating what they say. So it doesn't stop the conversation flat. It's like an improv. They take it because you're trying to create a scene. And if I was like, "Hey, Josh, you're riding a horse," and then you go, "No, I'm not," you know, the whole scene is cut. So right. If I were to say, "Hey, Josh, you're riding a horse," you say, "Okay, and I'm on this horse now," blah, blah, blah. So that allows you to talk to a girl for so long because you're not you're not disagreeing with her no matter what she says, and then you guys start to have a lot of fun.
Right. So that's a really great way to get over tests is to practice that yes and. And we would actually go, in the beginning especially, we would go yes and, right, because it was just easier that way, right, for me to remember it. But like I was saying before, actually, if she was like, "Why don't you fuck off?" I would go, "Whoa, whoa, look, I just met you. I'm not really ready to start talking about sex yet. I mean, we can work this out. You know, we can keep going. Play your cards right. Buy me a couple drinks. You know, take me out to dinner a couple times. I really like the ballet. You know, whatever it is." And that was kind of get me through that test. So that's another way you can do it. But again, you're agreeing with her. You're like letting it go, right? You're continuing the conversation. And that's really what it's all about. So that's one. And then you can also use it just to think of things to say. And that's where, or like Kevin, if I were to do this with you, I might go, you actually say yeah, yes and with me, and we'll just continue, right? So I'll say, "The sky is blue."
Yes, and the floor is brown.
Yeah, and I'm standing on the sky.
Yeah, well, I'm standing underwater.
Okay, so see how this is going? It's like, it's just coming out without us having to think about anything. Now, if I didn't say yes and, yes says, okay, that's true, and this is true. So if you start thinking like this, then what happens is people can't box you out because you're not letting them put walls up. You know, as they put up a wall, you go, "Yeah, that's a wall, but I'm invisible." You know, "I'm a wall, that's a wall, but I can walk through walls, so it's okay." You know, and they're like, "Shit, okay, well, let me try this. And they keep doing it, and eventually they realize they can't stop you. And then that's usually whenever you do this with a girl and she's testing you a bunch, girls that you get through this with, the harder they are to get through to, it's like the easier they are after that, you know, just in general. If it's like, if you had a really hard time getting through this girl, that means that no guys get through. And that means that you're one of very, very few guys that she has options for and she'll go crazy over you. I know it's nuts to think about that, but a lot of women who are very, you know, very focused on filtering out men. Whenever a guy gets through and actually gets through the filters, it's as if they're the neediest girls in the world. And it's really strange. You'd be surprised, especially the really hot ones. They're like that, you know. Brad, you want to go ahead and grab the next question? We got two more questions, and then I think we're done for the day.
Yes. In one of my classes, I've met some girls who do not respond positively to my banter, although I show a ton of high value in class. Should I try to speak to them in rapport? Because the attraction could already be gone. Or be done, sorry.
I don't think that that's really what's happening. I think that my guess here, if girls aren't responding positively to your banter, it's probably because you are giving them positive body language when you do it. I can almost guarantee you that's what you're doing. I mean, I haven't seen you, obviously. I don't even know. I'm just reading this. But imagining that a girl responding negatively to my banter, it's almost always happened because I wasn't paying attention to my body language while I was bantering. So you want to make sure that you don't need the interaction whenever you're doing it. And if it's a situation where you're sitting there and it's like a quiet classroom and you're bantering, it's like it's going to be awkward for her, you know? So what you want to do is, instead of like, there's two different ways of looking at this. The wrong way is trying to think, okay, well, how do I come across like I don't need her and that I'm high value, right? When you're thinking that, you're actually projecting that you're trying to come across like you're high value, which means that you look needy, right? And that kills the attraction. So instead, you have to do all of these things to actually create that value. And I mean create the value of being a 10, not just like demonstrate high value in a way that you're telling high value stories or something, you know, like whatever it is, or, you know, people are, you know, you're really intelligent or something in class. That may be something that you value a lot, but it's not going to be something that women really typically value very much. It may come across as something unattractive, actually. So it's very likely that you're not delivering the kind of value that they actually respond to, and that you're probably getting that value from somebody else and then turning to them directly and then bantering and like showing neediness with your body language, because otherwise it wouldn't happen. Another thing you could do, though, is that before you start talking to a girl, if you want it to go very smoothly, just use what's called a false time constraint. This is probably it's just such a huge staple. Can't believe I didn't talk about it in the Tao of Badass. It's just like such a staple. I use it so much still. I use it, you know. And basically what that is, what that means is that you are right in the very beginning of talking to a girl, the first thing that comes out of your mouth is, hey, I can only talk for a second because I got to get back to blah, blah, blah. But, and then you say whatever you got to say, right? So I got to get back to my friends in just a minute, but I wanted to ask you a question real quick, right? Or I just want to say that that I think I can probably dance better than you, but I want you to prove it. You know, whatever it is. Or like, I just want to say that you look really cute with a mohawk, you know, but whatever it is, deliver your banter line. Or I think that you're trouble. So I'm going to try to stay away from you, but I'm having a hard time because you're so attractive. So I'm like being pulled over here like your tractor beam, right? So it's like in that situation, you are going to give a false time constraint first, and then you're going to deliver your banter line after that. This will make any banter line you ever think of work a lot better, just in general, right? No matter what situation you're in, no matter what, when you're using this, if you're walking up to a girl and it's no matter what the situation, if you say, I got to get going in just a second, but blah, 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 you will always have a better response than if you just come up and say whatever the banter line is. So try that and try paying attention to your negative body language and make sure you're using negative body language properly. Because if you're not, no matter what you're saying, it won't work. All right, Brad, looks like we got two more, so we'll just do these quickly.
Yes. Number one, is it bad to verbally tell a girl if you're interested in her, or is that too needy?
The answer to that is it depends. It depends if your body language and everything else is saying that you're interested in her, or it also depends if you've gone through rapport already, right? Also, it depends on her environment. If you say that whenever she's being hit on by a bunch of guys at a bar, it's not going to work. If you say it during the daytime, it's the last thing she expects to hear, then it will work, right? So if you say it and you're facing her directly and you're leaning forward, it's not going to work. If you say it and you're kind of halfway facing her and you're not leaning toward her, it probably will, you know, considering that it's not, you know, as long as it's not at a bar or something, you know. And when you say you're interested in her, are you saying, I'm interested in you? Or are you saying, I think you're really hot, right? Those are two very different statements. I think you're really hot is different. It's just not. It's not the same. I'm really interested in you is a completely different statement. So you can say that. The short answer is yes, you can say it. And the sort of longer answer is that it will only work whenever you want nothing else but to tell her. All you want to do is tell her. You don't want her to like you back. You don't care. You're just telling her, I think you're cute. I'm sure a lot of guys do, because you are, right? That's it. You don't want anything from it. You're not like, so can we fuck now? You know, so is that enough? Do I need to say anything else to make you feel good so you feel like taking your clothes off? You know, if you want something out of it, it won't work. If you don't want anything out of it, almost always it will. So keep that in mind and keep the circumstances in mind too in your body language, and you should be good there. The last question is kind of a cryptic one, and I can't really answer it, but I'll say the question anyway. It says, how do you spot high quality women? Well, the question here is, what the hell do you mean by high quality women, really? I mean, it's different for everybody. That's why I'm asking. You don't need to answer that now, because I know it's a really in-depth question, but you know, what makes a high quality woman in the first place? Some guys like women that are really secure in their sexuality, and that's what they consider to be high quality. Some guys like girls who are shy and are, you know, not really explored, haven't really explored their sexuality, and that's high quality to them. You know, depending on what it is that you like or want in a girl, that'll change your definition of high quality. But on top of that, another thing that'll change your definition is that the more work you do on yourself, the higher quality of women you start to attract and you start to be attracted to. So as you begin to improve yourself and get over your insecurities and act like a 10, basically, then you begin to attract higher quality women. And then your vision of what makes a woman high quality begins to shift drastically. So you start to think that different kinds of women are high quality instead of what you used to think. So keep that in mind. And the short answer to that is, I don't know. I mean, to me, high quality women are women that are intelligent and open and that are, you know, if I was single, of course, they'd be good looking, attractive women, and that know what they want. To me, it was a big deal for a girl to know what she wants. That was really huge for me. And that's what I thought was high quality. But if you like a girl who's all over the place, that's cool, man. I'm cool with that. I'm not going to be a, you know, the dating Nazi here. You know, you can like whoever you like. That's totally cool. So anyway, so that is the last question, guys. Again, I'm going to unmute Connor here for a second. Connor, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey, man. I just wanted to thank you for showing up on the call, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man.
And Kevin, you too, man. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, man. Anytime.
And then Brad.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here, too, and helping set this up and everything and sharing your amazing voice with everybody.
Anytime.
And thank you, everybody else. Thank you, everybody else, for showing up for this. I do have an announcement, of course. Next month, or this month is the last month of Founding Members Club, the Founding Members Club meetings. You are a Founding Members Club, a founding member for life. You're just not going to get charged for it anymore. And the calls will start to dissipate. If we ever do another one, it'll be, you know, just kind of like we want to celebrate and do one. I may have a call with you guys before I release anything, to see what you think about it and to get your feedback on it and to hear what you have to say, to see if I can refine it. I'll basically use you as a sounding board for anything that I do in the future moving forward. So thank you very much for being the founding members and being a founding member. And thank you for sticking with it here. And you'll always have access to the material that you currently have access to in the Founding Members Club members area. And I'm really looking forward to seeing your feedback and taking this stuff to the next level. The next step for everybody who hasn't been to one yet, or even if you have, if you want to go to another one, is going to a boot camp. If you haven't done that yet, just email brad@thedaoofbadass.com, and Brad will go ahead and set you up with somebody who can tell you a little bit more information about it over the phone. And, you know, if you have any questions, they can answer those questions. If you have already been to one, or if you're coming to one soon, we do have one going on in Miami coming up in May. Brad, do you have the exact dates for that?
I think it's the 18th.
Let's see. I'm looking for it right now.
Yeah, 18th, 19th.
18th and 19th. Okay, so I will be in Miami. Kevin will be there. Brad will be there. There'll be many others there. And we have a boot camp in Miami on May 18th and 19th. If seats are limited to this, obviously, because it's an in-person course. It's an intensive. It's 2 solid days of coaching. And we go out 4 times during that process. And you get a lot of field work in. So if you are interested, go ahead and write brad@thedaoofbadass.com. And shoot him an email. He'll forward it over to where you need to be, whoever needs to talk to you about it, and they'll get back to you and just kind of give you some information and answer any questions you have, and you can decide whether or not it's what you want to do. So anyway, everyone who I've talked to on this call has come to a boot camp, who's sort of spoken, and I know that they became who they are because of that process. So I'm very confident that you'll get a lot out of it if you do decide to show up. So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. Thank you guys again for everything, and I will see you in a week for our final Founding Member Club call. I'm kind of bummed it's over, but at the same time, I've gotten a lot out of it. I'm sure you have too. So let's just make this last one a call to remember, and we'll rock it out. Thanks again, guys. Appreciate it.